for the delay. Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, the host, brought to you by Coins Plus. Again, I apologize for the delay. There's a little story there. I'm going to take responsibility. I spaced out. I was busy texting. So what a terrible fool I am. Anyway, welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, the host. You know who sponsors it, Coins Plus. And Coins Plus has been around a few years, like 22 years. This is our 22nd fiscal business year, as they say in the business world. If you measure it like birthdays, it's our 21st year. But when you're paying taxes, it's your 22nd year. And paying taxes is not my favorite thing to do, by the way. Coins Plus can be reached at 444-0044 locally. But if you're calling toll-free outside the area, the number is 877-827-2646. And, of course, if you're on the web and you want to contact us, go through our website at coinsplus.com. We do respond to messages, I think, fairly well. If we don't, let me know. I'm told we do, and I hope I'm right. As I said, Coins Plus has been doing this for about 20-some years, and we've been so blessed by God. The business is, you know, I won't spend time on it today, but God led me into this many years ago. He actually put it on my heart from an early, early age, but he created a set of scenarios, as you know God does, that, you know, just walked me into it. It was, I've compared it when the business started, you know, being in deep, deep prayer, spending many, many, many moons in deep prayer about my career, my finances, my life. I was in corporate America and so on. Well, I might as well give you a quick synopsis, and I'll just let you know kind of where this all generated. So from an early age, my grandparents owned a secondhand store in Missoula, Montana, and they collected, you know, they dealt in antiques and stuff, but it wasn't something I really knew a lot about, but my dad did, and he's since passed. I don't know if I picked a lot of it up then. I remember at the earliest age getting a Mercury dime, and in my memory, it's the size of a beach ball, because it was something happened to me at that point. I absolutely fell in love with it, and it left this impression with me. I had an aunt back in the late 60s, I suppose, when I was a tiny little guy, few years old, on up to maybe 5, used to bring us silver dollars. And I remember that. The answer is no, I have no clue whatever happened to those. Ironically, there's a lot of things I inherited that also I can't quite tell you what happened to. But it sort of got me in, you know, interested. And then at different stages of my life, when I got out of college, I tried to kind of do some coin trading, and, you know, it didn't work out too well because I didn't know what I was doing. And I had all these weird, you know, situations where I'd gone into a coin business when I was in Helena, Montana. And I remember, you know, at that time, just absolutely being intrigued and thinking I'd really like to do that. I don't know why. I didn't know much about them. And then later on, when I was a regional manager for Bank of America, I covered a 3-state region. I traveled considerably. And I went to a seminar on, you know, the Federal Reserve and kind of what's wrong with our system. And I was, you know, I was the red, white, and blue. I call myself the red, white, and blue All-American banker boy. I was, you know, bought into the system, hook, line, and sinker, and thought everything was what it was. I was always extremely analytical, highly mathematical. And when I got into banking and, you know, I started to do heavy financial analysis for banks I worked for, and I remember doing a lot of work where I'd calculate you know, APR yields and spreads on various programs and portfolios. And I would go to the bank, I'd go to our operations manager, and I'd say, this program's not profitable, you know, and they'd be, you know, they'd be like, well, why do you care? I couldn't answer that. I just did. But there's a lot of things banks do with conversions and things where they really can't track the profitability of certain products. Or they may be profitable, but they may be profitable as the result of conversions and not of the portfolio itself, et cetera. So I was really into the monetary side of all this stuff. And, you know, it was something I was just super interested in. And I, you know, as I got more and more into it and understanding the economics of the Fed, and I just started to realize that, you know, how skewed and messed up the system was. And, you know, doing calculations on people's debt and starting to analyze the amount of debt that was held by the American public, all these things started to just really register with me. So I became a little bit of a historian, and I started to go back and look at the history of debt in this country. And I found out that the Federal Reserve is when it all began. Prior to the Federal Reserve, nobody borrowed money, hardly ever. And when they did, you know, I mean, it was loan sharking. The laws were completely in the favor of the banks until the 1933. I think it was the Glass-Steagall Act that changed that. I can't guarantee that off the top of my head. But then, so I went to this seminar and I learned about the Fed and all this stuff. And I thought, wow, what a mess. And the guy did not do a good job of explaining the solution. And so I did more research and I realized that, you know, precious metals were the answer. I hadn't at that point realized that God told us that already, that he created them and ordained them and authorized them and, you know, that it had his stamp of approval on it. I hadn't figured that out yet. But I figured out that, that, you know, hard assets was the secret. And I also began to do research into coins because I started out with the old $20 gold pieces. And I loved silver dollars immediately. I was like, why on earth would anybody buy a 1 ounce silver round when they can buy an antique coin for, you know, a little bit more money? You pay more than the silver in the coin, but I'm thinking, you know, you got something that's 100 and some years old and it's money. And I'm like, wow, this is really intriguing to me. So I started to research coins and I got the fever. I absolutely fell in love with coins, and they took me over. I just became an expert overnight. I studied them constantly. I read. I absorbed things like a sponge. For the most part, there was nothing that I read that didn't just soak in like water into, you know, dry sand. And there was no limit to what I could absorb. I absolutely had the fever for it. So I became a severely dedicated collector. And about that time, I tripped over a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. I may have heard about it on ACN. As I was traveling with the bank, I used to just live to listen to ACN. I loved it. I craved it. I loved the depth of the word. I just loved hearing people that spoke the word at such a convicted depth. You know, there was something about listening to the radio, the Christian radio that Tom Reed puts out, that just, it fed me and it helped me grow as a believer. And there was nothing I preferred over it. And my biggest frustration with it was when I would be in areas where I couldn't get coverage, and it just absolutely drove me nuts. I felt lonely when I didn't have it. But slowly I began, I think I heard from the Creature from Jekyll Island book on there. I read it, and it was a wake-up call because my background is very financially, analytically deep. I mean, I had, you know, a deep education in actuarial science, which a lot of people don't realize. You know, that's where you do all the statistical analysis for insurance companies. And most people might think, well, yeah, you're just a number cruncher. You are, But really, what does it boil down to for the bank? It boils down to profit and money. I mean, and so the actuaries ultimately are calculating all these numbers to get to the bottom line of money. So I started really getting a real strong understanding of corporate finance at that point. And then from there, I got into, you know, I didn't enjoy that job a whole lot. I worked for Equifax, which you've probably heard of them. They're the company that handles one of the major credit bureaus, but they're also monstrous. They do everything else. So they used to subcontract out actuarial services, and I was supposedly in a actuarial training program, and you had to take these excruciatingly difficult tests, and each test you pass, there's a total of 10 you can possibly pass to become a fellow, and each test you pass, you kind of increase in pay and rank, and they are just absolutely brutal, probably some of the hardest testing you can even fathom in the deepest levels of statistics and mathematics. And with my personality, it was a little dry for me. And so I chose to go into a management training program in banking. I took a huge pay cut to the point where we literally lived in poverty for years just because I wanted the opportunity. I thought I'd move up, you know, fast, which I did, but it was just a long haul. I had a wife who was, you know, bedridden with rheumatoid arthritis at the time, and you know, student loan debt and all that stuff because I didn't know any better. And then I started to get involved in people's personal finances, doing consumer finance, so I got deeply involved in that. My background is, of course, the Bachelor of Science degree in math and statistics and actuarial science, and I've got minors in a bunch of other weird things. Whereas, you know, I was certified as an EMT when I got out of college so I could be a, you know, at one point I was getting my degree in physical therapy and a minor in health and food nutrition. And anyway, I just went down a lot of different roads heading through college. And I decided I wanted to be in banking and I wanted to apply my money knowledge, but I wanted to deal with people. So as I learned more and more about that, I worked my way up the ladder in corporate America, which is in many times, you know, is about knowing when to speak and when not to speak. And, you know, some people think there is pride in not being able to regulate your mouth. That's very unbiblical. You've got to be an ambassador, as I say, for Christ. You've got to be, and trust me, it didn't come natural for me. I have very many strong opinions, and it's not easy for me to hold those in a lot. So as I moved up in banking, like I said, eventually I became a regional manager for B of A. I covered the 3-state region, visiting branches and clients and whatnot. And then God, through the series of events, introduced me to coins. I began to, after hours, I began to work with estate attorneys, antique shops, pawn shops, whatever, that were involved in coins or coin deals. And I would appraise, and then I began to buy, and then it became far too big for me so that I'd be in a hotel room on business up till 2:30 in the morning trying to sort and organize this stuff to get it back in my car to take off the next day, get up early, go to work. And then on the weekends, I got where I'd have to start traveling to national coin shows just to start selling stuff. And then, of course, as a diehard collector, I'd be buying stuff. And it just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Until finally it was time where God just absolutely, you know, I was praying and praying and praying that I wanted, you know, success. I just have always had a real entrepreneurial spirit, and I wanted God to give me something really cool I could live by. I knew from all my years in banking, when I was with B of A and Norwest, which became Wells Fargo, we could query, you know, the incomes of all the customers nationwide. And I knew that the most successful people were typically self-employed or, you know, of course, attorneys and lawyers or attorneys and doctors, but a lot of attorneys. The thing people don't know about lawyers is there's an absolute glut of Juris Doctorate degrees, law degrees out there. So even though some attorneys are successful, there's so many unemployed and underemployed attorneys, it's not even funny. It's an absolute waste of money for the average student. And so I was aware that I wanted a self-employment opportunity, but I had no clue what to do. So God introduced me to coins, and that began to grow as I just described. And when I was praying just hardcore about it, I really wanted to go into business. It was one of my dreams. And at that time, I started to get this really weird temptation because God showed me. He said, God told me clearly, if I want you to have anything, success, money, health, whatever, you must understand that it comes strictly from me, not from you. If I want you to have it, you'll have it. If I don't, you won't. And I'll provide opportunities. I will bless your efforts and so forth and so on. And so when it came to that point and I was praying and praying, I started to get hit up. Now, this may offend some people, but this is just where I was at. For some reason, I started to get hit up all the time with Amway. Okay, I mean, to a point where it was no longer coincidence. I had people hit me with Amway all the time. Well, Amway is, you know, it's a pyramid scheme. They get mad when you say that, but it is. And it's all about the riches, and they do have God mixed in there and everything else, but it's a lot about money. And for some people, it might be the right thing, but for me, it wasn't. And I just kept getting hit up with this singular kind of temptation where I got in arguments with people where they try to push me and persuade me. And over, I had many situations where I would just leave discouraged. And God kept saying, if I want you to have it, you'll have it. If I don't, you won't. Don't you chase it. Ecclesiastes says, don't chase a fantasy for money. And so I didn't. I just trusted in the Lord. And once I went through all those temptations or whatever challenges, then God opened the floodgate. And I was saying at the beginning of the show, once God began this process, and there's a lot of amazing stories inside of that, once he began this process, it was like being on an escalator, you know, where literally I just rode the escalator, and God opened doors in front of me and slammed gates behind me. And it's so important, folks, when you pray, it's so important that you can separate your desires for what you want and God's will. And you may say, oh yeah, that's obvious. Folks, it's not. I've watched people over the years literally walk themselves into utter disaster because they couldn't control their own desires enough. You've got to control your desires. You cannot pursue your own desires. You've got to seek God's will. And I've seen so many people pray for God to do something. Well, if you're making decisions, especially financial or career, number one, you know what the fruits of the Spirit are. They're love, they're joy, they're peace, they're patience, they're kindness, they're gentleness. You know, you got faithfulness, self-control, and so on, goodness. They're soft, they're subtle, they're strong yet gentle attributes, traits of the Holy Spirit. So when you're feeling this immediate urgency, do or die, an employee I had here for many, many years got into a situation where he got married super fast, and I was trying to tell him, you know, I was trying to talk to him to get him to rationalize, and I kept saying, you got to pray, you got to pray. He said, I did, I am, or whatever, I did. And I said, so what's God telling you? He says, well, God's telling me it's do or die. God doesn't operate that way, folks. If God has something set aside for you, it's yours. It's his, and therefore it's yours. You don't need to panic and freak out and chase money or hurry and make decisions that are all based on emotion and hype. I've seen so many people pray for their will and think that this is how God's going to answer prayers and force themselves into situations that end up destroying them. But, you know, so we've got to be so careful to seek his will alone. And even when it doesn't fit our will, we've got to seek the truth no matter the cost. This is wisdom. We've got to be able to seek his will and shed everything else. And for humanity, this is a difficult order, okay? And so, and what I was going to say is, it's more important to pray that God shuts doors sometimes than opens them. I mean, if we know we're doing His will, say we're going on a mission to a tough country, we can pray for God. Once we know that that mission is His will, we can pray for God to open those doors. But what I've found to be much more effective is to say, Lord, if you don't want me to do this, shut the doors, because we do have free will. And, you know, there was a period of time that I stepped out of the banking. I spent a couple years in the car business as a business manager for a massive dealership because I loved cars. I thought, you know, the business would be the same. No, the business has nothing to do with cars. It's just a business that sells big widgets. And when I finally got my interview with B of A to move on, my initial interview went very well. But when I was calling the operations manager about the job who'd interviewed me, he's like, I don't think you're getting the job. And I said, why? He said, well, we've got affirmative action, which, folks, back in the early 90s, affirmative action was out of control. It may still be. I just know back then. And he said, we have to hire a woman. And I said, well, how's that fair? I mean, how are you, why not hire the most qualified person? He goes, tell me about it. So I said, is she more qualified than me? He said, no, not at all. You're far better qualified. And I said, then I should get the job. He goes, well, not in our company. We've got to follow this affirmative action. And he said, I just can't override that. I said, who can? He said, well, Roger, who was the division manager at the time. So I said, well, how do I talk to him? And he said, well, you can't. And I said, well, I want to. How do I talk to him? And he said, well, you'd have to come down to the office, which was down in Portland, over on the coast. And I said, well, you know, how do I get there? And I basically talked to him. I said, fly me down there, and I'll meet with him and, you know, see what I can do. So he was nice. The operations manager was nice enough to fly me down. I got put in front of the divisional manager, and it was very obvious he didn't want me there. He just was, you know, Pete had spent the money to get me there, and he didn't care whether I was there or not. So I went into the office, and it was ironic because the Holy Spirit had me, led me to talk. You know, although I had this strong financial background, I was led in everything I was telling him to discuss my character, my integrity, my work ethic, my commitment, my loyalty, my honesty, you know, which is kind of like self, you know, promotion. It's sort of braggadocious, which was weird. And when I was talking to him, I mean, he really wouldn't listen to me. He was doing stuff and ignoring me. And, you know, I had some weird things that happened because I asked him. This guy was, you know, his boss was the president of Bank of America, you know, and at the time, I think B of A was probably worth $100 billion. And so there was just a certain number of division managers under the president. I mean, this guy was very high ranked, and I sat in his office, and he wasn't giving me the time of day. And I said, sir, can I ask you a favor? And he looked up, and I said, can you look at me while I speak to you? Which was obviously seemed relatively disrespectful, but I just figured I had nothing to lose at that point. I thought I was losing. So he actually did. And when I left, I felt like I'd bombed the interview because all I focused on was character and integrity and all this other stuff. Well, apparently it worked because I ended up getting the job. But what I found out later was Roger, who was my boss at that point, was amazing. The guy was one of the best boss I've ever had. Born again believer, awesome guy. And what had happened to him was he had literally a couple years earlier dedicated his life to Christ. He was probably, I don't know, 55. And what had happened was he was having massive heart attacks, and he was in the hospital, and they kept reviving him, and he kept having other ones. And so he apparently was having these very bad experiences when he would die. He was literally seeing bad things coming to get him. And when they would resuscitate him, he finally said, God, if you save me, I will serve you the rest of my life. And instantly his heart attack stopped. And he just laid on the table, and the doctors were like, what happened? And so he had dedicated his life to Christ. That's why when the Holy Spirit led me to really focus on character and integrity and work ethic and honesty, that was very important to him. And he became a great friend because of his our shared faith. And then, you know, it worked out. And I was speaking with a relative about this just this week that knows my history and my story, and there's a lot more stuff like that. But that the point that she made was she how interesting it is that although God's involved in my life, in your life, he provides opportunities. He blesses our path. But we have to go out and fight for it and get it sometimes. There's, you know, if we think we're just going to sit back on the lounge chair and pray for God to get us a new job, no. If you don't like your job, you figure out what you want to do, you dress accordingly, you prepare your resume accordingly, and then you find those places that could hire you, and you go out and you meet the person with the authority to hire, and you work at it. You make yourself stand out. I can tell you as an employer, the value of a candidate that applies in person and then comes back to follow up a few times, that puts you at the top of the heap. People don't do it. I've had an extensive amount of hiring experience, like I said, from this business down to corporate America and so on, and people just don't follow up vehemently or adamantly. And if you need a good job, you've got to go out and fight to get it. God expects us to go to work, even to get a job. And in this fallacy that has permeated everybody's thinking that nauseates me, this concept of, well, if God wants me to have it, I'll have it. Yes, but God provides opportunities that we need to go get. Where a lot of people fail in life and lack successes and glory stories is because God provides an opportunity and they don't take advantage of it. You've got to make the step. You've got to reach out and take the opportunity. You're not going to sit home in your armchair watching Oprah, which I hope you don't, and have God just drop a miracle in your lap and say, here, you're now the CEO of IBM. I mean, it's not going to happen, and I doubt that many listeners would be, but you get my point. You got to go out and hit the streets. This is what the Bible's all about. We are free will, and you cannot get caught up in this thought process, which to me often parallels Calvinism, or Calvinism parallels it, that it's all said and done. Your destiny is foreordained and written. You have no say over it. So if you lay in bed all day, that was God's will for your life that he knew you'd do anyway. So it doesn't matter. No, he calls us to action. He calls us to be the best we can be. This is why I love Proverbs. It's all about our actions. It's about our hunger and our drive and our motivation and our character and our integrity that makes the train of our lives run. It helps us accomplish things. This is why we sometimes honor people with phenomenal accomplishments. Now, we have gone off the rails with that. We now honor people for ridiculous lack of accomplishments, like Obama for getting a Pulitzer Prize for peace when he accomplished absolutely nothing. But, you know, historically we rewarded people for, quote, a job well done, or for standing above and beyond the rest and going out of their way to get there and make something happen. So you need to literally go out and do and act and make things happen. Don't wait for it to come to you. You've got to show God the effort. You've got to show him the strength. You know, you've just got to have that drive and motivation. Otherwise, there's no value to it. If God, it's like being a spoiled child. There's a reason that, you know, a lot of kids that are raised where their parents enable them and give them too much stuff, and have a mother that has three kids and at dinner time says, what would you like, honey? What would you like, honey? And what would you like, honey? And give them three different meals like they're sitting down at the smorgasbord at Golden Corral. That doesn't teach your kids to accept and appreciate what they're given. It teaches them that the world caters to their every need, that it does everything for them, and you need to make sure you're not relaying that message to your children. You cannot be afraid as a mother or father, whichever one might be the enabler. Don't be afraid to let your kids struggle through something. Make them do their own laundry. You know, teach them how to iron their own clothes. Get them a job at an early age, whether it's mowing the neighbor's lawn or shoveling their snow, so that they can go out and then make them buy a couple articles of clothing for the school year. I mean, that's the life I was raised in, and there's a lot more to the story, but it doesn't hurt. You can't hurt a child. I should say by making them work hard. You know, there's all these scriptures about basically spare the rod and spoil a child and, you know, use a rod on their back and you won't kill them and all this. We've gotten to such an era on spanking that it's detrimental. It's almost, you know, it's dangerous. You can be arrested and everything else now. The important thing with spanking children is it has to be an absolute decision for conscientious defiance, okay? You cannot punish a child for being a child. You don't punish a child for spilling milk. You may lecture them and talk to them about being more careful and wise, but you always offer solutions. Anybody, folks, think about this for a minute as I say it. Anybody can go around and point out problems and pick out problems. Anybody. Now there are jobs at high levels of consultants that their job is to go into companies and find problems, but those consultants always come with a solution. They don't just come in. You don't hire somebody to come in and say, wow, this company screwed up. Here's a list of everything that's wrong. I'll see you later. They show them how to resolve it and how to solve it. And it's important that you teach your kids and you know, people in your life, bring the solution. Anyone can find problems. It's not a healthy spirit. Bring a solution. And it's, you know, I was just talking to a friend the other night about a church situation they're in. That's, the church has just really changed and they do a lot of things weird, and I've been there and I agree. But this person and other people see all the problems. They've discussed it with the pastor. And I said, you know, the problem is, I said, you need to bring solutions, things you want to try different or do different. You know, maybe have one service that plays the old hymns instead of all the new age rock, Christian rock or whatever it is, you know, which, I mean, some people really don't like. They don't associate it. But anyway, in everything you do, bring solutions. And so, all along the way, when God led me to this business, I had visions. I had crazy things happen. I talked about the vision a while ago of the room with the safe deposit boxes. All of the major attribute points of our building, our facility, were in my mind in this kind of vision situation. And then when I got into business, I had been in corporate America. I absolutely loved coins. And folks, as far as investments go, I'm telling you, I understand your lack of knowledge in some cases, and people think, well, I understand bullion, so I'm going to just stock up on that. But, you know, just because you're ignorant of something does not mean that the thing you're ignorant of is bad. And you can't also, people literally, this will sound dumb, people will confuse ignorance and stubbornness with wisdom. And that's not the case at all. Ignorance and wisdom are different. Wisdom wants information. Wisdom craves information. A wise man wants to be sold. He doesn't, because he has self-control. People don't persuade them to do things or make decisions they don't want to do or make. So you must embrace people's input. That's the seek wise counsel, and a wise decision is made in the presence of many wise counselors. You want that input from other people into your lives. You don't want to be narrow-minded and blocking people out, because we begin to isolate ourselves on an island, and God did not make us to be that way. God made us to be plugged into the system, interconnected, which is why solitary confinement in prisons can be so destructive to people, because it literally can drive them insane. And especially like inmates who've shot a police officer or something, they get put in, usually in extensively long solitary confinement. Whatever time they get in the yard will be in a cage with no interaction with other people. And these people, and then these prison guards, and I'm not saying it's wrong, but these prison guards are directed to offer no human compassion whatsoever, which is interesting to me, because we know that our prisons, first of all, we have the highest per capita adult males in the world incarcerated, number one. Number two, we have the highest per capita adult males in the world that are convicted felons. And we know that the rate of recidivism out of prisons is extraordinarily off the charts, because we do not rehabilitate. And some people mock that and say, hey, this guy's a pile. He did this terrible, heinous crime. Why waste our time, energy, and efforts, you know, to retrain this person? And the reason is because it makes society a better place. It makes it safer. So many of these guys will get out of prison and they'll jump right back into their old lifestyle, and they'll be back in jail in no time, because they were never given a method to protect themselves, to change. And being exposed to other people in that fashion can cause a whole heck of a lot of bad influence. And so, you know, I think you probably get my point there. So, long story short on the business. So once we opened up, I just wanted out of corporate America. I had no desire. I never thought about growing it or much. And I love coins, and I want to talk in a minute about the effect they have on people. But as we got going and people figured out we were a high volume, low margin mentality dealer. In other words, bring us the business and we'll minimize our profit and, you know, and try to give you the best deal we can. And a lot of the old timers in the industry, they just wouldn't budge. They just wanted to make too much money. And to me, when you're dealing with investments, especially, you can't ethically do that to people. It's not right. You need to absolutely, I guess, operate with the highest levels of ethics and integrity. So the business took off much faster than I ever dreamed, and eventually it kind of grew a life of its own. And after 20 years, we've done such a substantial amount of purchases and sales, you'd almost find it hard to believe. It's been such a blessing. It's been so wonderful, and I love what I do. I work way too much. I spend an extensive amount of time organizing coins and material, and we build a lot of portfolios. And folks, it's so important to us to build the right portfolio for you. Things will be bullion based oftentimes, but much, you know, we give a lot of semi-numismatic when we can, because it's items that you're going to be buying around the price of their metals content, but they are able to grow independent of the market. And things like mixed circulated silver dollars. I mean, literally, when silver took a big correction back in like 12 or so, I mean, silver dollars moved down very slowly. They move up kind of slowly, but then abruptly, once the market rallies, and it takes a period of time, maybe weeks or a month, for people to... It's kind of ironic, when the market races up, the reserves of metals drop out. So people do buy high and then they sell low. And so what happens is people will find that the generic products have dried up, and then they'll start focusing on other products. And those other products are so often the highest performers out there. I mean, in the last you know, 15 years, I could list coins that have quadrupled or 5 to 6 times their value over 15 years. In other words, $100 invested or $150 invested in, you know, 2000 or so would now be $600-700 on a lot of coins. They're a great investment. We want to balance you out. You want to be a wise steward. You want to preserve and protect your capital. We call it wealth and capital management or wealth and capital preservation. We want to help you preserve and protect it. And you know, it's super important that you have this attitude. You don't go in with this crazy speculative get-rich mindset, which seems to drive the stock market mentality far too much. People are not in stocks most of the time. And by the way, the vast majority of all the money invested in the world is in our New York Stock Exchange. But unfortunately, many people get into that specifically with the desire to get rich. And that's the wrong motivation. You want to preserve your capital and maintain at least inflation rate, which is also an artificial index I've discussed numerous times, where the consumer price index is, it doesn't include food, transportation, real estate, or energy costs. And so when they say inflation's 1.5, it's probably 6, 7, or 8%. And so you need to get this kind of return on your investments, and that's what we try to do. We also price things at wholesale. Right now, just to give people the absolute rock bottom deal, you know, over the years I have had people make mistakes and, you know, put things in wrong and maybe not always be as inexpensive as we could be on a national basis. But the thing is, they always, you know, we always correct it and we keep striving the right direction. So, anyway, you're listening to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host, sponsored by Coins Plus, 444-0044, or through the website at coinsplus.com. We're always looking for correspondence there. I spoke a little bit ago. There's something so ironic about the desire for metals and coins. And I was thinking today, you know, people who are unfamiliar with it, and please realize, just because you're unfamiliar with it doesn't make it bad. And we have to admit, Christianity can sometimes lead us to make judgment calls based on something, based on fear. So if something makes us uncomfortable, we'll say it's unholy. I had an employee who had Asperger's. He was an odd duck. No sense of humor, you know, just very dry. And real Asperger's has usually a bizarre walk and motion, kind of a, you know, there's just a lot. And he had it. But something to do with his youth, childhood, or his personality, he hated amusement rides. He could not go to amusement parks. He just never had the desire for the adrenaline or whatever it is they thrive on. So in his mind, he had decided, and he grew up Christian, that amusement parks were evil. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, of course, Disney supports this and that, and we really didn't get into that, but I understand all that. But innately, they're fine, just like money. Innately is neutral. There's nothing wrong with money. It's the love of money that destroys you. But he had vilified amusement parks just because he was afraid of them. He'd been exposed to maybe a few rides at who even knows, maybe the fair or carnival, I don't know. But he decided he didn't like them and it was bad. And I've seen this time and time again with people. I've seen people, a conversation I had recently with a pastor, and I started to mention biblical numerology. Because he hadn't been around it, he kind of goes, I don't believe in that. I'm like, what do you mean you don't believe in that? And he said, I don't believe in it. It's you know, the devil uses that. And it's like reading tarot cards. And I'm like, no, it isn't. I've said, you know, mathematics is the language of God. It's the language by which he created everything. Everything can be explained mathematically. So I've also seen that with astronomy, okay? Not astrology, but astronomy, where the constellations were created by God for God to glorify God. And people will avoid that because the devil uses the things that God made in a negative way. The devil cannot create. The devil can only come to steal, kill, and destroy. Think about it. We are made in God's image. What makes us in God's image is our ability to create. After all, it says in the beginning, God created. And then he created man in his own image. Well, the one thing we knew about God by that time of the Bible, when he said he created us in his own image, was that he was creating. And then you look at what man does around the earth. We create like crazy. This pleases God. People will go to the extreme, and I had this comment made a while ago that all the stuff that man does is materialistic. It's wrong. They have this medieval mindset that we're supposed to not care about anything around us, not the money, not the material things, nothing. It's all a distraction from the devil because this is his domain, is what I've heard. Not out of my mouth, but I'm just telling you, people have said this foolish rubbish. I couldn't disagree more. If God didn't want us engaged in this system, why in the world would he put us in such a phenomenal system? Look at what we do. I mean, we even get to the point now where we can split an atom and create an explosion that's so big that it'll take out major metropolitan areas. I mean, that's creation, my friends. We create. And that's why the devil hates us, because he cannot create. He can only steal, kill, and destroy. So he'll steal something like, you know, biblical astrology. And trust me, I understand how touchy that word is. I don't even want to use the word. But the fact that he used the stars to tell Abraham how, you know, what his descendants will look like, and, you know, we navigate by him and all these things. In fact, the way the constellations are written out, the constellations tell the story of the Bible one step by step, and they were made by God. And what's crazy about them is, for years, I think it might have been Texas A&M or somebody, invested millions of dollars to try to find a better system to map the constellations. After a couple years on this project and millions of dollars, they came back and said, we cannot improve on the constellation system we have now. Because if we don't have these creatures and characters, man doesn't recall where things are. Otherwise, he's just looking at a big flat surface in his mind with little yellow dots all over, and it doesn't make sense at all. It can't be remembered. So there's so many things about the world that can be used for good. And what I was touching on here a minute ago before I so smoothly rolled away, think about people's response to money, coins, okay? I was just thinking, you know, I sort coins, I see people around coins. You can drop a $600 iPhone and people pick it up and go, hey, you dropped your phone, okay? Even though they could probably take that thing to the pawn shop and sell it for $100. Now, you drop a couple silver mercury dimes and people look around and they'll pick them up and try to get away with it. The other thing that I've noticed is that people, there's an act of temptation. People act differently around coins. It's partly because we've associated it with money, but also because I think it's innately built into us. God created this intricate financial system we're forced to engage in. We have no choice. If we want to be activists and sit outs and all that, we can do that. But he created this incredible economic system that he wants us engaged in. And, you know, the system's amazing. It's joy. It's interesting. It's wonderful. And and heaven's going to be built out of a, you know, visible creation at a level you can't even imagine. God is phenomenal. So people ask, hey, if I have gold and silver, how do I buy bread with it? How do I feed myself with it? Folks, here's the bottom line. When you have precious metals-based assets, now, you've got to preserve and protect your capital for a variety of situations. You know, you've got to preserve and protect for the bad times. That's the survival stuff. You got to preserve and protect for life in general. You got to preserve and protect for the good times. You got to preserve and protect your wealth and capital that God's given you for all scenarios. Well, when you do a balanced portfolio with Coins Plus, it's all the same. Now, for a long time, this Harry Dent was online with all these pop-up ads saying, gold's going to $700, you know, to get people out. And it went on and on and on, and it never came true. And people always asked, and I said, no, that's ridiculous. It's at rock bottom now. Well, it proved to be true. Now it's climbing up solidly. You know, not with anything too, you know, it just doesn't have too much personality, but the metals are just kind of growing solidly. So for the last couple of years, if you're in them, you've been making a solid 15% a year. Numismatic coins and semi-numismatic have outperformed that considerably. Silver dollars, Carson City silver dollars, you know, higher grade, better day mercury, silver dimes, just anything that's scarce and hard to get. The collecting audience is phenomenal. Obviously, the millennial generation isn't quite as interested, but the baby boomers still have the money, and a lot of them are engaging in coin collecting. They're kind of the last of the Mohicans. They're the last great generation that is going to capitalize on this. And after that, I don't know what will happen, but the millennials are definitely a challenging generation. I've spoken with many people. 37% of them are still living at home with mom and dad. Millennial means between the ages of 18 and 30. This is the hiring pool that's been so difficult for us to hire from. So anyway, we're getting to the end of the show. Think about how people respond around metals and coins. You bring somebody gold and say, I want to trade you for this. If they either know or they don't know what it is. If they know, you're in. If they don't know, you're in, because people all want gold. Even those that don't have it, they're like, yeah, I wanted to get some. How do I know it's real? Well, look at it, do some research. We can go to Coins Plus, use their specific gravity machine, electrolysis, whatever you want. And by the way, Coins Plus stands behind every single thing we sell, 100% authenticity, 100%. Period. All the time. And you can go to the bank with that, I assure you, folks. But it's just really important that you realize the value of the metals when you place them before people. You get into old coins, it's even better. You get old U.S. silver coinage. You're buying it as a pure silver product, but, you know, you've got old coins. And there's this desirability, this perceived value. I've seen people that buy in smaller quantities, and they'll go horse trade on the weekends at gun shows and flea markets and things, and they'll work their way up because everybody's interested in the metals or coins. I mean, in silver dollars especially, they just are. There's something that comes out of us when we're around it. We know it's real. We know it's good. You cannot sit and think and assume and worry about what if this, what if that. What is important is that from the very second chapter of Genesis, as I said in the Bible, in the beginning God created, he tells us. Then he tells us that he created man and woman in his own image. After that, he introduces them to precious metals, tells them where to go get it, and basically says, welcome to the economy. You're now going to be using this as a form of wealth transfer and compact value. It's just what it is. People like it. They need it. They want it. It's just the way it is. But what's awesome is how clear the Bible is that all throughout, this is the pinnacle from Solomon to Babylon's captivity to, you know, even Moses, you name it. It's showing up all over the place, all the way, like I say, to where the Son of God was born by a virgin birth, And the first gift he got, because the wise men were prompted by the Holy Spirit, was gold, frankincense, and myrrh. We know that even in the end times, the destruction of Mystery Babylon has to do with gold and silver. It's very clear in there. It says gold and silver in the bodies and souls of men, because in the old writing, they put the most important last, and precious metals came last in the destruction of the World Trade Center, which was the highest concentration of precious metals reserves ever in the history of the world. And of course, it was destroyed in 1 hour, like Revelation 17 says. But, you know, the fact is people love the coins. They love the metals. They want, you know, they just desire to have them. And then, like I said, the Bible tells us clearly that in the final days, the days of judgment, people will be casting their metals in the streets, their gold and silver, because it won't buy salvation. But God put that in the Bible a number of times, more than once, for the specific fact he wants us to know. He wants us to know it's going to be there. He has endorsed and authorized. He even tells us it's all throughout heaven, everywhere, all around. All around heaven is gold, everywhere, bedecked. People used to say the streets are paved in gold. Everything is. Where does he get the elements? I don't know. You know, maybe he has beings he created that go around the universe and capture it. If he did create the universe, which I believe he did, he's obviously able to circumnavigate it well. And so, anyway, basically, if you want to preserve and protect your finances in a way that's recognizable, transportable, immediately liquid, timeless, will always be there, we've got good things to look forward to and bad things. Folks, financially, we have been on the wrong track for a long, long time. It's not going to change. It's only going to get worse, and you can either preserve and protect yourself or stand around like a fool until you get poached and taken out. We offer the alternative where you can preserve and protect. Coins Plus, 444-0044, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN, or through the website. Also, the website has all of our previously recorded radio shows available. Call us. Let us build your portfolio. We're good at it. We'll help you out. We love to do it. Take care. God bless, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.